I just didn't see myself as a sensitive, artsy-fartsy young man being part of a military that I thought was lads, quite brutal, hard, rough around the edges. It just wasn't who I was. So I surprised myself actually going through with it, and I think I surprised my family as well. I remember the moment I basically mentioned it in a small group of us in the block. Yeah, he is so-and-so. Yeah, he's at home. Yeah, my boyfriend. The moment I did that, what a relief. You can't actually describe the weight off your shoulders.
It's more than 20 years since the lifting of the ban on homosexuality in the armed forces. But what is life like now for serving members of the LGBTQ plus community? Today, I'm joined by Adam Powney, an army reservist, a gay man, and a values-based leader. He's also a social media manager here at BFBS. As a child, Adam had a keen interest in all things army, but as a young man, he ruled it out as a career because he didn't believe he would fit in. I'm Lindsay McDuff, the Culture Colonel, and this is my conversation with Adam.
I'm one of five from a big family, full of love, down on the coast. So I had a really rich childhood, being the youngest one of quite a few older siblings, so I could learn from their mistakes. Passionate about music, it's all I did, whereas my brothers did sport. I was always the musician and the artsy one in the family, like my sister. Passionate about media, creation, anything artsy, I just loved. Anything that took me away from reality, I loved. Dressing up, probably painting quite a clear picture of what I'm like. Went to college to do media, did media at uni. Uni made me. I thrived at uni. It was the most amazing experience because I was independent, you know. Growing up at home with lots of family, with very loving parents, when you break free, it's a whole different life, isn't it? So yeah, I thrived at uni, made the most of it. And what you'll find about me, if there's an opportunity on the table, I'll probably jump into a yes and learn how to do it before giving it a second guess. And that's probably how you sum me up. I'll say yes and then work it out. It may have its downfalls, but I love to think that I will give everything a go. I will try it. And yeah, that's how I ended up being station manager of the student radio station, becoming trustee of the student union. Not because I wanted to, it's because opportunities were there. And I went, yeah, all right, I'll give it a go. But that's what I'm like, actually. I don't often seek out stuff. If there's an opportunity, I'll take it. And that's how I've got where I am in life, to be fair.
And where do you think that came from, that get up and go, that drive and determination to try things?
That's a great question. I often get asked the question of, who do you look up to? Who's your idol? And I can never pinpoint a celebrity or anyone like that. And this may sound really soppy and really, oh, come on, Adam. But my sister is my idol. She was the first one in our family to go to uni. She was also artsy and she just carved her own path in what she loves and really good at. And I just always looked up to her. So I think I just absorbed her work ethic, her passion. Again, she took opportunities and just did it. But also, both parents were really hard working. Like, my work ethic's really good and I do work hard, but nowhere near as hard as what my parents did. Multiple jobs at one time, trying to keep the family afloat. There was five of us. It was busy. They needed to keep us going. I think that's where it comes from, my sister, and then just seeing my mum graft and my dad graft really hard.
And in your creative and imaginary world that you had as a youngster, did you dream about joining the army?
Probably not the army, actually, funnily enough. It would have been more RAF, Air Force. Growing up on the coast, there was air shows here, there and everywhere. I adored the Red Arrows. There's a picture of me, I think it was Eastbourne Seafront, in my Red Arrows suit, ear defense, red ones, because it had to be like the Red Arrows. And I just loved jets and planes and anything military. I was in awe. I just loved it. I would play in the forest and every stick on the ground would be a weapon or a rifle or something. You would play video games and I would love the shooty ones. But yeah, I don't know where that came from. I just loved everything about the military, but never saw myself in the military, which is bizarre.
How did that change? Because from what you've described, it was almost as if you were predestined to join, but you went on a different journey. Mm. And so how did you end up coming to join the army?
Yeah, so a bit of context. My uncle was in the Air Force, did his full career. A very tall man, 6'5", 6'6", very opposing figure, a man's man. I then later in my young life, I found out my granddad was a PTI when he did his national service, and he was a bit rough around the edges. So I had those figures in my life. I tried to become a cadet, army cadet. I did it, ordered all the uniform, but I was a sensitive soul and I didn't like being shouted at, didn't like being told what to do. So that wasn't for me at the time. But as I grew up, I did college, I did uni, I found my confidence, who I was, where I thought my place was in the world and stuff like that. I learned to deal with other people better. I learned to deal with the world better. And I thought I would just give it a go when I joined BFBS. I saw it day to day. You were immersed in it. You were reporting on it. You were presenting shows for the military. And a housemate I was living with actually was joining the reserves. She was like, come along, come with me. I want someone to come with me. So I was like, okay. We sat on the kitchen island. We filled out the application form on the laptop. In all honesty, I probably wasn't going to go through with it. But I turned up. The recruitment team were really lovely. And yeah, 6 years later, I'm still in. I've found the confidence to just give everything a go. Like I said, what I'm like, I will try everything. Didn't expect to be in this long, to be fair. I just didn't see myself as a sensitive, artsy-fartsy young man being part of a military that I thought was lads, quite brutal, hard, rough around the edges. It just wasn't who I was. So I surprised myself actually going through with it, and I think I surprised my family as well.
And did you discover when you joined, and it seems like you joined a part of the army that welcomed you, did your preconceptions of what the army needed and was like wasn't the reality for you?
Oh, for sure. And I think part of it is because it was reserves. Mm-hmm. What I find with the reserves is there's a healthy balance between exposure to not the real world, but the civilian world, and that combined with the military world. It's a nice entrance in. It's a bit softer. There's a bit more of a mutual respect. They understand the civilian world better. So going in, they weren't brutal. They weren't harsh. They weren't intimidating. They were just normal people. And I actually sat down in the recruitment office when you meet them. I was like, everyone's all right here, actually. And then we went on an interest weekend in Longmoor camp. Not the nicest of camps, but, you know, we did an interest weekend with the weapons and stuff and all the other reservists from different units across the south. Everyone was very different. They weren't all laddie. They weren't all rough around the edges. Some were like me, a bit artsy. We had doctors, teachers, and just feeling that everyone can just be different, but then they can come together for this job, for this role, for this opportunity. That's why it shifted for me, because I was exposed to a different perspective.
And did you find that your experience, once you started serving and you interacted with some of your regular contemporaries, did you see that their experience was different from yours?
The experience that I can call upon is when you go through your basic stuff, you know, as reservists. You have your day-to-day life, you're all adults, and you rock up at this phase one establishment, and it's a culture shock because the regulars are delivering your training, they are a bit brutal because it's their job to get these youngsters fighting ready. It's their job to get these youngsters to a level of a grown-up, you know. And I'm sure it's hard for them to adapt to training adults who have been through life, been through some really tough stuff as well, have really important jobs. But what was refreshing, and this is just my experience, was the sergeant who was in charge of us, he just went, look, mutual respect. I know you're here because you want to be here. I'm not going to mess you around or treat you like dirt. Give me respect and I'll give it back to you. That was the most grown-up approach to it and refreshing approach, because I was prepared to be shouted at, which we were, because it's the military at the end of the day. You've got to do what you're told. But I was prepared for a much brutal introduction. And again, all these little moments, experience with the regulars and stuff, it is different for them. They're in their little cocoon where you have to be a bit tougher, because it's not the easiest of careers to do, but they can adapt and they adapt to you. When they're exposed to you more, they learn more, pick up more. And again, it is about that mutual respect. You respect their way of life, their culture, and reasons why they're the way they are, and they'll do the same for you. But those exposures helped me soften my guard and my wall.
And you talked about mutual respect, and respect is one of the values that the Army has. You wrote eloquently a few years ago about the importance of values in your life and work. How have they informed your growth as a person?
I kind of put some accountability things out there a couple of years ago about my values, and I narrowed it down to three. It was create, so go through life creating as much as you can, because that is who I am. I'm a creative person. Serve. So every moment I look back, there's an element of service for others in there. So that's my second one. And then the third one is just hope for something better to come. But the service bit is core to service with the military. I was a youth leader at a local church back home. I love spending time with older people, for example, because I love keeping them company and doing things for them, posting their letters if they need to. My neighbours, I'll do anything for them. And I get that from my mum. She was a carer for multiple people. I just grew up seeing service. So that is core to my value. And I think that's why I love the military so much and why I've embraced it. It's because you're serving a bigger cause beyond yourself. So that value is centre in my three, because it is the most important.
And the passion that I hear coming through loudly also may generate a conflict for you, in that you've got two jobs. You've got your civilian job and your Army Reserves job. As you're committed to really strongly to both, how do you get your work-life balance well?
It's hard, to be fair, because you want to give both jobs equal energy, equal passion, but it's not realistic. And with the reserves, they understand that civilian work comes first, family comes first, and then reserves is after. They will like your commitment. They will like you as much as they can have you, but they're not immune to the reality of work and family come first. So that helps. So if you can't do certain weekends or certain exercises or certain courses for your professional development, they understand and they're not going to penalise you for it. So that's really helped. I've had to dip in and out with work because I went to the Falklands twice and it meant I couldn't do some career progression courses in the reserves. It just happens that way. But I also keep my life quite simple, not complicated, because I know if I'm going to do work, I will do that properly. If I'm going to do reserves, I don't want to clog my life up too much with other stuff and keep it busy, because that's not how I function. And to the sacrifice of keeping in contact with people and friends, and doesn't mean I'm not thinking about them, it's just I keep it quite simple, and that's how I operate, that's how I like to do my life. But that's how I found the balance. And also my other half, Andrew, the support network behind me, and my dog, without them willing to hold the fort while I'm away, both in BFBS and reserves. Massive help. Because I joined the reserve single and I joined BFBS single. I was like, oh, I'm going to make the most of this. This is great. I'll take on everything. I'll travel. The reality is you do find someone, you do settle down, you do get a dog, you do start a family, and you just learn to adapt.
And has Andrew got a military background?
Not massively. His school was naval, so he's always been interested in that. But again, he was artsy. He was the drum major. He was musical like me. His granddad was in the Royal Navy. He was a stoker. So they had interest, but not massively. Much like me, it was on the peripheries, but never saw or positioned themselves as it being an option.
And noting that we're now in 2024, and it's 24 years ago since the ban on homosexual people joining the armed forces, that's a generation. Do you notice that your life is utterly the same regardless of what your orientation is?
Yeah, it is the same. I can't see it going in any different path, any different route. I was very blessed to have a really liberal, loving family. Not everyone has that. So I had that behind me. I didn't really have to come out. And when I did, it was literally the week before I went to uni. I was like, oh, by the way, I should probably tell you. And it was as if they've known all along before I even knew. Mm-hmm. So my life has always gone on the journey that I foresaw. Everyone says about me, yeah, you've always had a plan. And I did. It's college, university. But it's enriched my life more than anything. I came alive at uni, became independent. I learned all the lessons. I found who I was. And I just can't see myself being a straight man. I just can't. It's who I've always been.
But has your work in the workplace, has you felt valued and belong to the organisation wholly?
Yeah, at BFBS it hasn't even been, I've never been paid a second thought. For quite a while I never said, oh, I'm gay, or I've never, if I was dating or Andrew, for example, I would avoid the questions of girlfriends, wife, kids. I would just either stay out of the conversations or just reframe and change my language to partner or other half instead of boyfriend. I don't know why. There was nothing in my surroundings that said that had to be done, that it wasn't accepted. But I think my own internal discrimination that has just been absorbed over the years, because we still got work to do now in society, but you just absorb it as a youngster and it just sits in there and you don't even realise until you catch yourself. So yeah, at BFBS, it was never an issue. I just chose to have a wall up, which may have affected the start because I thought I had to be, oh, it's a military broadcaster. I'll be a bit laddie. Didn't last long. With the military, I've never felt pressure to not be who I am, to not reveal who I am. I never impose it on people, or I never come forward before I'm asked. I always wait other people to ask and correct. I'm not sure it's the best way to do it, but I find in conversations, if someone says, oh, so do you have a girlfriend at home? I was like, boyfriend, he's called, you know. I wait for those opportunities because I feel like that's the most sensitive for them and for you to do it that way and educate softly rather than go, hiya, I'm gay. Hi, I'm Adam, I'm gay. Like, it just doesn't happen. Yeah. It's never been an issue. I've never seen it as an issue. And I feel comfortable wherever I go, with work, with the reserves. I never feel I have to have a wall up anymore.
We've been talking about the journey, and as we go through life, we grow as people. If we have a growth mindset, we grow as people. And I'd be interested to hear what you have to say about what your key lessons are from all that you've packed in so far to your life, in terms of how you think that's going to help you with your continued journey?
Oh, big question. I think, and this goes for diversity, inclusion, workplace, everything, is I've learned tolerance to different people. And I think that's the biggest thing anyone can learn. You may not understand, accept, agree, but you can be tolerant and you can just let people do their own thing. And it's taken a long journey, a long time to understand different people and just accept that they are who they are. Can't change everyone, can't re-educate everyone, just be tolerant. And it goes both ways for people not understanding being gay or trans or anything. Just be tolerant and just accept it for what it is. Be very stoic about it. Be matter of fact. It is what it is. It will be what it will be. If it doesn't affect you, then don't labour it. So that's the biggest thing in my journey that I've learned.
And you talked earlier about respect and that being one of the organisational values. Having organisational values also would help guide people through the complicated nature of both workplace and society, but with respect and tolerance being the top two, presumably.
Yeah. Respect for others is massive. But also what you find, just talking about those core values with the army, you need courage to be yourself. And until you've got that courage to be yourself, you will find it hard to respect others. So it is a journey in itself. Because in the first couple of years at reserves, I remember my courage was on the floor to be who I was. Mm. I was looking around me. I was the only gay person. I think I still am in my unit. And finding that courage took ages. But again, you respect others for who they are. You get that back. And then having the discipline to just stick with it. Don't deviate.
And having that additional challenge of having difference, for me, I didn't have that. Mm. And I found it difficult to find my courage when I was your age. So for those of us that don't have to find additional courage to deal with something that's, or to think about something that's so central to us as a person, means you're expending energy in a way that I didn't even have to think about.
Yeah. So going back to when I first joined the army, I was constantly, all I could think about is, when am I going to tell them? When am I going to reveal it? Because you have this wall up, and you do, because you need to protect yourself, because you go through life and you have experiences where you're not quite as accepted as everyone else. Like the lifting of the ban is still so recent, but we've come so far. But you still have your wall up because you want to protect yourself. But you do, you use mental energy when you should be sitting there thinking about the job in hand. You're thinking about, when am I going to tell these people left and right of me that I have a boyfriend? You always have that in the back of your mind. And even now, going through day-to-day life, is you're waiting for the moment you have to correct someone. And it's bonkers.
Well, and you're talking there about the challenge of leadership and what culture looks like. And where culture changes depending on who the people are in the team or the unit you're in, that makes you second guess whether or not you're going to be valued wholly as a person. And Field Marshal Slim said, leadership is just about being plain you. And if you're not able to be you, then you're not able to be the best leader that you could be. And the organization then won't get the best from you. Yeah. As well.
And I'm a prime example of that. Again, you go back to basic, you're so much more reserved because you have this guard up. And then I remember the moment I basically mentioned it in a small group of us in the block. Yeah, he is so and so. Yeah, he's at home. Yeah, my boyfriend. The moment I did that, what a relief. You can't actually describe the weight off your shoulders. People say it as a turn of phrase, oh, it's a weight lifted off. Literally, it was the biggest weight on your shoulders at that moment. And then for the rest of the course, I've never felt better. I've never felt more part of a team. And then they also respect you as a leader, as a peer. they respect you more for revealing that to them, because it's clear that you trust them with that information. And as a leader, you need to be your full self. And again, how can you if you've got this guard up? Because people can see right through it. You know, you can always tell. I will never forget the moments when you reveal that part of yourself to people and that weight lifting off your shoulders.
A brilliant example of the freedom that it allows you to have to concentrate on being the best person you can be without having to worry about what people might think.
Yeah.
How fantastic. I'm going to ask you a couple of questions more broadly, if okay. I may, about what you do to relax. You've talked about your dog. Is dog walking central to your relaxing?
It's not always relaxing. It could be quite stressful. He's a nervous dog, bless him. But walking is fundamental to my sanity, basically. Just getting out and just focusing on the dog, or having that headspace to just think. Some people go out to the pub. Some people do sports. Some people do, I don't know, writing. Or creative people need time to procrastinate, you know. And that is me all over. I always need space to just get out and walk and let my mind do its thing. So that's what I do to relax. I walk before work with the dog and after work. And they're my zones to just chill out. But also putting on, I don't know, Netflix or a streaming service and just fully watch it. I'm getting really good at not scrolling whilst watching, and it feels amazing. Mm. But I go through phases. I find inspiration everywhere. So one minute I'll be immersed in a book, and then I won't read for months, but I'll be immersed in a TV series, and then I won't watch them very much, but then I'll write blogs, or I don't know, having those mechanisms like walking or fully watching a program. It's so underrated to put your phone down for a little bit. It's hard, but when you fully sit there and absorb and relax into it, there's nothing like it.
I find a way of reflecting, looking through a list of quotations that I keep. If I hear someone who says something remarkable, I'll write it down and keep it.
And same.
I find them really useful because they're often applicable in various different situations. Do you have a favourite quotation that you use? And if you do, why do you like it so much?
Mm. There's two. I'll start with the shorter one, and it's by James Clear, who wrote Atomic Habits. And he says, and this is quite apt for this conversation, every action you take is a vote for the type of person you want to be. And when I read that, I was like, that's so true. Because you go through life and every action is a vote for the type of person you want to be. You want to be tolerant, okay? Be tolerant of other people, take those actions, or have respect for others. Or the moment where I tell someone or correct someone that to let them know that I'm gay is a vote for I'm gay and proud, you know? It's those little things. And then there's another one by Howard Thurman, who is an author, philosopher, pastor, and it just hit me in the soul a little bit. And it's, don't ask what the world needs, ask what makes you come alive and go do it. Because what the world needs is people who have come alive. And again, if you're not comfortable in yourself and you're not fully who you are, how can you make the best impact in the world? Because you haven't come alive yet. And when I went to uni and found that independence, I came alive and I was the best I could be at uni. I made the most of it. When I joined the army, the moment I said to my peers that I have a boyfriend, you know, I suddenly came alive.
That reminds me of a great quote by Jennifer Lee, which is, be fearless in the pursuit of what sets your soul on fire. My last question is, what would you say to yours about coming alive in your quote? Mm-hmm. Is that the advice you would give your 18-year-old self?
For sure. I would say, don't think too much about what other people think of you. Just be true to who you are. Come alive in who you are at that moment. It may not be who you are in 10 years' time, but be true to that moment, make the most of it. Because if I look back to when I was 18, I was constantly looking ahead at what career could I have? What impact could I have in the workplace, in the world? Rather than thinking, what do I want to do? How can I make the best of who I am? It was never about me being the best me. It was all about, what career do I want? What money can I make? But yeah, I would say, go back, be who you are, make the most of who you are, and come alive, because that is what the world needs.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. Thank you.
No, thank you.
I really enjoyed talking to Adam and admire the values he's set for himself. Create, serve, and hope. It's wonderful he's found what makes him come alive, knowing this is what makes him happier, more valued, and able to contribute positively at work and in his wider life. If there's someone you know who would benefit from hearing Adam's story, do send them this episode. Thanks for listening, and let us know what you think by emailing us at theculturekernel@bfbs.com. Take care until next time.